Okay. My topic is the wise and foolish virgins. That's another parable that I feel like is maybe not as well known as the prodigal son or the good Samaritan. So we will actually read all the way through it and kind of focus on what it says, because I'm going to talk about kind of the details of it a little bit. So Matthew chapter 25, verse 1 is where it appears. And it says, "Then shall the kingdom of heaven be likened unto 10 virgins, which took their lamps and went forth to meet the bridegroom. And 5 of them were wise, and 5 were foolish. They that were foolish took their lamps and took no oil with them. But the wise took oil in their vessels with their lamps. While the bridegroom tarried, they slumbered and slept. And at midnight there was a cry made, Behold, the bridegroom cometh, go ye out to meet him. Then all those virgins arose and trimmed their lamps. And the foolish said unto the wise, Give us of your oil, for our lamps are gone out. But the wise answered, saying, Not so, lest there not be enough for us and you. But go rather to them that sell, and buy for yourselves. And while they went to buy, the bridegroom came, and they that were ready went in with him to the marriage, and the door was shut. Afterward came also the other virgins, saying, Lord, Lord, open to us. But he answered and said, Verily I say unto you, I know you not. Watch therefore, for you know neither the day nor the hour wherein the Son of Man cometh." So the whole story here is about that the wise virgins came to this wedding ceremony, or they were preparing to go to this wedding ceremony, and they brought oil with them for their lamps. The foolish ones also came, but they did not have this oil. And when the time came to go, the foolish ones weren't prepared to go, and so they had to go and try to fill up their lamps in time, and they weren't in time to go. And so we can kind of think about this first in a little more modern language, because basically these are like bridesmaids, and when you have a wedding, you choose people who are, you know, people who have meaning to you and people who have had some kind of influence in your life. And even, you know, the main bridesmaid is called the maid of honor, and that's because they are, you know, it's kind of an honorable position to hold, and it's something that you are honoring them by choosing them for that position. And so if you think about this, you know, you pick people to be in your wedding, and you say, okay, well, I'm going to ride around, and I'm going to pick you guys up, and then we're all going to go to the wedding. You pick 10 of them, and only 5 of them are even, you know, dressed and ready to go when you come around for them. That would be pretty embarrassing, and that would be you know, just really a letdown for you. And you think, well, you know, those people really didn't care about me quite as much, because they weren't prepared for this honor that I, you know, presented them with. I chose them for this because I was telling them that they really mean a lot to me, and that I really think that they're a good person. And it turned out that they weren't caring enough for me that they would even prepare to go. And so that's kind of the, I guess I'd say, the modern summary of it. And so I want to look at a few things. First off, I want to look at the fact that it's about a bridegroom, which is just a groom, as far as I understand. And if we look at Ephesians chapter 5, verse 22, this is kind of where it talks about Jesus being the groom and the church being essentially his bride. So Ephesians chapter 5, verse 22 says, "Wives, submit yourselves unto your own husbands as unto the Lord. For the husband is the head of the wife, even as Christ is the head of the church, and he is the Savior of the body." And so if the husband is head of the wife, they are spouses, and if Christ is head of the church, then Christ is like the husband, the church is like the wife. Therefore, as the church is subject unto Christ, so let the wives be to their own husbands in everything. Husbands, love your wives, even as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for it, that he might sanctify and cleanse it with the washing of water by the word, that he might present it to himself a glorious church, not having spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but that it should be holy and without blemish." So this is not a one-to-one comparison with this story, because this story is about the groom coming to get essentially these bridesmaids. But I wanted to point this out, that this is kind of the main spot that we point to say that the church is the bride of Christ, and that essentially the way that we should treat each other in a married relationship is that the husband loves the wife as if they were Christ loving the church, and the wife is subject to Christ as if they were the church members looking to Christ, but also, if you are loving each other that way and you are having this full love that you should have, then that shouldn't be a problem. You know, that shouldn't be something that you think of as, oh, well, you know, as a wife, I'm going to have to submit to my husband. That's going to be a pain, or, you know, that you're upset by that. That shouldn't be the case. If the love is there and the love is the way it should be, then everything should be good in that relationship. Also, I want to look at the fact that being wise versus being foolish between these two groups of people, the five versus five, this was determined by which ones were prepared. And so you could think of that in your own life, that being wise is being prepared for situations, and whether that's by knowledge or by preparing, physically and getting things ready for things. In this case, it was being able to gather this oil and have it available for when they needed it. Proverbs chapter 9, verse 12 says, "If thou be wise, thou shalt be wise for thyself. But if thou scornest, thou alone shalt bear it." And so essentially what this is saying is that being wise and making wise decisions is kind of a personal thing. It's not something that somebody else can do for you. Someone else can't be wise in your stead. Rather, you have to make your own decisions, and being wise is kind of a personal thing for you. And also being unwise is also a personal thing. The next thing is that the groom came back at night to meet them. So he didn't come back in kind of a daylight situation where he's afar off and you can see, like, oh, he's about a mile away. You know, we got a little bit of time to kind of get stuff ready and get prepared. And, he'll be here soon, but not super soon. And so we can kind of go and get our oil now and get ready to go. No, it was actually they were all completely asleep, unable to do anything else when the call came for them. And so we want to look at 1 Thessalonians chapter 5 for some more related verses on that. 1 Thessalonians chapter 5 verse 1 says, "Now concerning the times and the seasons, brothers, you have no need to have anything written to you, for you yourselves are fully aware that the day of the Lord will come like a thief in the night. While people are saying there is peace and security, then sudden destruction will come upon them as labor pains come upon a pregnant woman, and they will not escape. But you are not in darkness, brothers, for that day to surprise you like a thief. For you are all children of light, children of the day. We are not of the night or of the darkness. So then let us not sleep as others do, but let us keep awake and be sober. For those who sleep, sleep at night, and those who get drunk are drunk at night. But since we belong to the day, let us be sober, having put on the breastplate of love, of faith and love, and for a helmet the hope of salvation. For God has not destined us for wrath, but to obtain salvation through our Lord Jesus Christ, who died for us, so that whether we are awake or asleep, we might live with him. Therefore, encourage one another and build one another up, just as you are doing." So obviously, the most important verses here and the most relevant ones are verses 2 and 4 for what we're talking about today. But also, the last part is talking about this sleep and this state of sleep that we could be in. And essentially what I think of for that, what it's talking about sleep, is kind of like, we don't sleep in that we are aware of what's going on, and we're aware that there is something important going on, and we are not putting off decisions for later. You know, we're not always relaxed, and we're rather at a state of activeness and proactiveness. Now, verses 2 and 4, though, verse 2 says that the Lord will come like a thief in the night, which essentially means at a time that you won't understand, you won't know when he's going to come, because if someone's going to come to rob you, they're not going to tell you in advance. Now also, though, in verse 4, it says, "But you are not in darkness, brothers, for that day to surprise you like a thief." And so what I understand from this is essentially that we kind of get a sense that there will be someone coming. And if you have that in mind, you can prepare for it. Like, if you knew someone was planning to rob your house, maybe you still don't know the exact day, you still don't know the exact time, but you're able to prepare. And it's kind of like the movie Home Alone, when the guy is preparing for those robbers to come to his house. He heard them talking about it. He knows they're going to come and rob his house, and so he sets up all these traps for them to get entangled in. So if we know that the night is coming, we can prepare for it, but we got to prepare for it right away. We can't put it off and say, well, you know, I'll just hope that, you know, I'll see him in the parking lot and I'll be able to get ready then. you know, instead we have to prepare early because we don't know when it's going to come, and it could come at any time, and that could be very soon. Now, the next part I want to talk about is that the foolish virgins, they asked to have some of the oil from the wise virgins, but there wasn't enough for both of them. And so when they asked for it, they were basically like, hey, you know, we're out of time. We need to share this oil. And the wise ones say, well, there's not enough oil to share. You know, if you have enough for one person for the night, they're not going to be able to half that. Then both of them would be out of oil eventually. And the purpose for this and the reason that they couldn't share is because the wise virgins were not the source of the oil. And this is kind of another comparison that we can have to Christians, is that we are not the source of righteousness ourselves. Instead, they could only point to where the source was, where they got their oil. So they said, you need to go and go to the people who buy and sell oil, and you need to buy your own, and you need to come back. And something that you can think of for this is that maybe some people surround themselves with Christians and they maybe attend church services and they go to Bible studies and they go to fellowship things and they're around Christians a lot, and maybe they're just thinking, well, some of that righteousness will rub off on me, and, you know, being in the company of all these righteous people, you know, surely I'll be accepted in too. But in fact, it's actually more of a personal thing. It's helpful to go and to be around Christians and to have good influences, but that's really all they are, is influences on you. They can only influence you to try to make your own decision and try to make your own personal acceptance of this gift that God has provided to us, but you can't save others with the amount of righteousness that God has presented with you. So Galatians chapter 6, verse 1 is where I want to look for this. Galatians chapter 6, verse 1 says, "Brothers, if anyone is caught in any transgression, you who are spiritual should restore him in a spirit of gentleness. Keep watch on yourself, lest you too be tempted. Bear one another's burdens, and so fulfill the law of Christ. For if anyone thinks he is something when he is nothing, he deceives himself. But let each one test his own work, and then his reason to boast will be in himself alone and not his neighbor. For each will have to bear his own load. Let the one who is taught the word share all good things with the one who teaches. Be not deceived. God is not mocked, for whatsoever one sows, that will he also reap. For the one who sows to his own flesh will from the flesh reap corruption, but the one who sows to the Spirit will from the Spirit reap eternal life." And something I want to point out here is that the Greek words in verse 2 for bear one another's burdens, and the word in verse 5 for bear his own load, those are different words, and they're different words in this particular translation as well. But the word in verse 2 is baros, which is weight, and the one in verse 5 is phorcion, which is burden. I think I'm pronouncing that right. But essentially, you can understand that they are different types of weights. There's one type of weight that people have that is able to be helped by others. You could think of this as maybe like a financial weight, maybe something that needs to be done with them, something that we could do as charitable work to help them. Maybe they have some kind of a social issue that you can talk to them with, and, you know, they just need someone to talk to. You know, those are the types of weights that we can help people with. But there's also a type of weight that each person has to bear individually. And that's verse 5, saying each one will have to bear his own load. So these are not contradictory to each other, because otherwise he would say in verse 2 that you should bear each other's burdens, and then in verse 5 that you should bear your own burdens. And so they must be different types of burdens. And in verse 7 and 8, back that up, it says that whatsoever one sows, he shall also reap. So if we sow to the flesh, then we'll reap from the flesh, and if we sow to the Spirit, we'll reap from the Spirit. I also want to look at Matthew chapter 5 and verse 14 on thinking about being the light and kind of reflecting the light. So verse 14 says, "You are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hid. Neither do men light a candle and put it under a bushel, but on a candlestick, and it giveth light unto all that are in the house. Let your light so shine before men that they see your good works and glorify your Father which is in heaven." So what we get out of these two is to say, for one, that we have to make our own decisions. We have our own load to bear. We can get help from other people, and we can get influence from other people. You know, they can help to raise the fleshly burdens that we have, and they could also help us spiritually by talking through things. But the decision has to be our own to do what is right. And the second part here in Matthew chapter 5 is that we should let our light shine to others so that they can see our good works and our love for God and glorify our Father, which is in heaven. So they're not glorifying us because of what we're doing. They're looking at us and seeing there must be more to them than just what we're seeing in the flesh. And so they look to God and they're able to see him based on what we're doing. And now the last part of this story is when the wise virgins got to go in and the foolish ones went out to get their oil and they came back and, you know, they were too late. The gate was closed and the gatekeeper said that they didn't even know who they were, basically. They didn't know them. And Matthew chapter 7, verse 21, it says, "Not everyone that saith unto me, Lord, Lord, shall enter into the kingdom of heaven, but he that doeth the will of my Father which is in heaven. Many will say to me in that day, Lord, Lord, have we not prophesied in thy name, and in thy name have cast out devils, and in thy name done many wonderful works? And then I will profess unto them, I never knew you, depart from me, ye that work iniquity." And I want to point out that this exact phrasing is used in this parable. In verse 11 it says, "Afterward came also the other virgins, saying, Lord, Lord, open to us." And so it's saying here in verse 7, many will say to me in that day, Lord, Lord, and then say the things that they've done. And so essentially in this story, they were saying, well, hey, please open up to us. We now have enough oil to make it in. You know, we went out and got it. Even though it was late, you know, we still did it. And so what we can gain from that is essentially that verse 21 of Matthew 7 says, he that doeth the will of my Father is the one who will enter into the kingdom of heaven. And so we have to be doing things the way that God told us to do them, and not putting them off and essentially doing them exactly the way that he laid out for us to do them. You know, and we can't just make these excuses and say, well, you know, I thought it would be okay if I just put it off and did it a different way. Or I know you said that we should do it this certain way, but you know, I had my own ideas about it, and so I decided to do it a different way, and I hope that'll be okay. You know, God's actually the final answer on what's okay to do and how we should do it, and so it's important to follow what he's told us to do. And we've been told, I don't remember exactly the verse of the passage, but it says that God's commandments are not grievous, they're not too heavy to bear, so it is reasonable for us to do things the way that God asked us to do them. And so in conclusion of all this, essentially we should be prepared to meet Jesus when he comes back for us. And basically all that means is just doing what God says right away rather than just putting it off. And also don't think that you're going to have extra time to do things later. You know, it's like when you're getting ready to go somewhere, you know, you get ready right away and then you can kind of sit and wait for the time to go. That's a lot better than waiting till the last minute and then just hoping that you'll have enough time to throw everything together and go. It says also, don't hope that righteousness will rub off on you by being around other Christians. Don't think that being around other Christians is going to make you more righteous yourself. But also don't discount being around Christians as good influences and having them as friends and having them as good backup. For when you have issues. It is good to have Christian friends, and it's great to come to services and great to come to fellowship. Just don't think that that's all there is to it and that that's all that you have to do to be saved. You know, it's a personal thing as well. And so it's your own actions in the end that affect your salvation and show what kind of relationship you have with God. So that's all I have. Thank you.